Hello, I'm Liz Chambers. This month, Daniel Noel brings you a special report about the U.S. relationship with the United Nations. We'll return to our regular format next month. I'll see you then.
When you hear the words United Nations, what comes to mind? Do you picture peacemakers from all over the world putting their safety on the line for the sake of people they hardly know? Or do you hear the echo chamber of disinformation created by the UN's critics?
So why bother having a UN at all? That's today's Your Word Live question.
When you're talking about trying to advance American ideals around the world, the UN is not the place to do it.
I don't see the United Nations as able to do anything.
Yeah. But some things cannot be reformed. We would not think of trying to reform, for instance, the Mafia, the Nazi Party, or the Communist Party. Neither should we try to do so with the UN.
The scam was to get everybody loving the United Nations. The scam was to get everybody thinking the United Nations is feeding poor people.
I wrote a book called Hating America, The New World Sport, in which I documented the anti-Americanism rampant among the 190 countries in the UN that are not the U.S.
Corporate-supported efforts to destroy the UN began decades ago. Here's a book published in 1985 by the Heritage Foundation, the other right-wing think tank created by the owners of Coors Beer. The Heritage Foundation attempts to discover whether the UN makes any positive contribution to solving world problems. So far, few Americans have been naive enough to accept such toxic nonsense, but the UN bashers now present the need for UN reform as a given. The right uses this false framing to brainwash the gullible the way they did when they falsely connected Iraq to 9/11.
Saddam Hussein was a threat. He is a declared enemy of the United States. He had used weapons of mass destruction.
It's not just the cable TV hacks who are demonizing the UN. Last month, for example, the Washington Post reported that more than half of Americans agree that the UN should be disbanded if it can't be made more effective. Hold on. My propaganda alarm just sounded. First, it's a false choice to suggest we must either fix or close the UN. The correct answer is neither. The UN is not broken. Second, the group that did the study, the Hudson Institute, is a right-wing think tank, not a news source. In a few minutes, we're going to visit the UN World Headquarters in New York City. First, however, I'd like to debunk some of the lies we've been hearing from the ranterazzis. Can we have a little quiet in here?
It said that you were going to control what happened in southern Lebanon. You're going to disarm.
That's better. Why does the same crew that promised us the Iraq cakewalk want to abolish the United Nations? Think about it. The UN supports workers' rights and fair trade, while the neocons and their pals want to dismantle unions and exploit the world's poor. The UN seeks to prevent war, but war is profitable for the people supplying the equipment, and when the war profiteers make money, guess who gets a big fat campaign contribution? The UN works to improve the lives of women and spread wealth from the richest to the poorest nations. The Bush administration limits access to family planning and passes laws giving tax cuts to billionaires. Without the UN to step in, the Israeli invasion of Lebanon might have turned into a regional war. The U.S. wasn't about to tell Israel to stop the killing. We were too busy sending them more cluster bombs. Also, the UN has the power to prosecute war crimes. For For some reason, that scares the hell out of our current leaders. Why else would the Bush administration have refused to sign on to the new International Criminal Court? The Iraq hawks, most but not all of whom are Republican, want badly to discredit the UN, not just to protect their own skins, but also so they can act unilaterally and use the military when and where the corporations point them. When someone does come forward to expose U.S. hostility toward the UN, our resident pit bull is there to snap at his ankles.
In a speech this week, Mark Malik Brown criticized the Bush administration for keeping the American people in the dark about the good things the UN does around the world.
That is not well known or understood back home, in part because much of the public discourse that reaches the U.S. heartland has been largely abandoned to its loudest detractors, such as Rush Limbaugh and Fox News.
Earlier in the week, Bolton called for all of Kofi Annan's senior aides to resign when the Secretary General's term ends later this year. Now Bolton is demanding immediate action against the UN's second-in-command.
Secretary General Kofi Annan, we think, has to personally and publicly repudiate this speech.
John Bolton has about as much right to serve as U.S. ambassador as Dick Cheney does to send troops into battle. That's not just my opinion. Bolton's nomination hearing spooked senators from both major parties, so Bush did an end run. He handed Bolton the ambassador job while Congress was at recess. Now they're saying he'll be out of a job when his term ends in January. Imagine how the other 191 ambassadors must feel. It's like being forced into an arranged marriage with your creepy uncle. You go to bed one night and wake up the next morning to find him leering at you from the end of the bed, wearing your pajama bottoms and yelling at you to get up and make him coffee.
Truck driving was a fun thing for him. He enjoyed it. He was told and convinced that he would be safe.
They all had driven trucks and were truck drivers before they went over there.
I went to make a better life for my family.
We were told we would not be sent into any areas of known danger.
Well, I trusted the company.
They told us, oh, you won't have to worry. You have plenty of protection. Guaranteed $140,000 in 9 months. Anything that sounds too good to be true usually is.
Can the Secretary of Defense, can the Vice President, can this administration take the military to war to feed the greed of contractors?
We've employed corporations, private entities, to carry out inherent government function.
They should not be using civilians for combat operations.
A corporation is going to put human needs on the bottom if it conflicts with profit.
Basic safety precautions weren't taken.
Forcing them to go out and to drive into battle zones.
They cut corners left and right.
No sharpshooters, no escorts, no flak vests, no helmets.
No armor, no weapons.
No rear gunner, no armored vehicles, not even a map.
It's just wrong.
God damn!
Jesus Christ. God help us all, Lord.
How do you place a value on human life?
They're willing to sacrifice people.
Let's look at five of the most corrosive myths about the UN and get the facts straight. Myth number one, the UN is an ineffective and irrelevant organization. Fact check, between 1900 and 1945, before the UN was formed, about 82 million people died in wars around the globe. Since the formation of the UN, over the same span of years, about one-fourth of that number have died. 21 million dead is not good enough, of course. But it demonstrates that the UN is performing exactly the function it was intended to, preventing small conflicts from turning into world wars. Have there been failures? Certainly. Rwanda and Bosnia are blaring examples, no thanks to Bill Clinton there. But if every human life is priceless, it's fair to say that the world is about 60 million times better off today than it was before the UN.
I remain convinced that the only answer to this divided world must be a truly united nations. Climate change, HIV/AIDS, fair trade, migration, human rights, all these issues and many more bring us back to the point.
Keeping the peace is a lot more complicated than making war. The UN also serves as the glue that joins together dozens of committees, agencies, and funding organizations, along with hundreds of non-governmental organizations, or NGOs. Ever hear of UNICEF? Or Doctors Without Borders? Or the World Food Program? The UN acts as a focal point for these organizations, so that when a crisis strikes anywhere in the world, dozens of groups can mobilize rapidly. Does that sound like an ineffective organization to you? Myth number two, the UN wastes American taxpayer money. The annual core budget for the UN is about $1.2 billion. The U.S. pays 22% of that cost, despite the fact that our economy accounts for 36% of the world's wealth. So we actually don't even pull our own weight. In 2007, our yearly UN dues will be $422 million. We waste more money than that every week in Iraq. Do the math. What's a better investment? Peacekeeping or war? As a further insult to the world, the U.S. doesn't pay its UN bills on time. We owe the UN about $700 million in overdue payments. A lot of vital programs and personnel have already been cut because of U.S. foot-dragging, many of them with a real cost in human lives. Myth 3. The UN wants to create a one-world government and take away your guns. Have you ever tried to get 10 people in a room to agree on something? Now imagine you have 192 countries, each with its own agenda and language. Altogether, these nations contribute about 70,000 military and civilian personnel to the global peacekeeping force. Does that sound like a sinister global army capable of doing anything except what it was intended to do, keeping the peace? Have you ever heard of Blackwater Corporation, based in Virginia?
Blackwater is one of the largest and most conspicuous security firms in Iraq, with about 300 employees there. Blackwater is staffed largely by retired U.S. military, including former members of the Special Forces.
They're one of dozens of private firms supplying mercenaries to protect British oil wells and Halliburton trucks in Iraq. Which organization is more of a risk to our democracy? A force of multiracial, multinational peacekeepers, half of whom are civilians, most of whom don't even speak the same language, or an army of thousands of private mercenaries right in our own backyard, whose value system is rooted in a corporate handbook?
The military fights for the guy next to you, or the guy in the next foxhole, who you've trained with, slept with, ate with, spent all your time living with and working with. From the corporate side, it's a question of, where's the next contract coming from?
Then there's the gun scare. The Christian Right and the National Rifle Association have gained a lot of traction from this paranoid ruse. Ever wonder where NRA President Wayne LaPierre gets his talking points?
You may also not know this. Wayne is a caring, generous, compassionate heart.
Now, come on. I know a lot of card-carrying, gun-loving libertarians watch our show, and we're glad to have you. But you're being manipulated. Sure, the UN wants to get AK-47s out of the hands of kids in war-torn countries, and rightly so. But if anybody is going to kick down your door and take your hunting rifle, you can bet he won't be wearing a blue helmet. Don't forget what happened in New Orleans. Those orders to seize all the guns came straight from the White House.
Sometimes entering open houses with guns drawn and instructions to disarm anyone inside.
By the way, the U.S. currently supplies 29 troops to the global UN peacekeeping force. That's right, 29. I guess the coalition of the willing doesn't include us when the goal is world peace. Myth 5. The UN, especially the Security Council, gets in the way of U.S. policy. Just the opposite is true. The UN not only rarely challenges U.S. intentions, the UN assists the U.S. all the time. It helped us achieve a settlement with Libya over the Lockerbie bombing. It monitors and restricts arms sales to terrorist groups, provides critical information about those same groups, and supplies financial tools with which to cut off their funding. The decision not to endorse Bush's invasion of Iraq was a rare event. But keep in mind that the staunchest opposition to invading Iraq came from other democracies, such as France and Germany. To make amends, I suggest we all buy a bottle of French wine and make a toast to old Europe. They tried to warn us about Iraq. One last thing, the oil for food scandal. A report by Paul Volcker found that individual governments and private companies did the dirty work, not UN authorities. Then, when the UN handed over $10 billion left over from the Oil for Food program to U.S. officials in Iraq to be used for rebuilding, it got lost. Yeah, sure it did. Let's head down to the UN building in New York. Maybe we'll bump into Fox News. I hear they circle the place like vultures.
Hi, we're taking the train down to New York City, public transportation. Easy on global warming. I'm excited. We're going to the UN building. I'm doing research on the way down. Unlike Fox News, we actually look things up. Get this.
This would be amazing. Remember what I was saying about Fox News?
Before we start, I want to mention a couple of things. If you have cell phones, would you please turn them off right now?
We're starting our tour. It's an air of excitement.
The UN's mosaics and other artwork serve an important purpose. They dissolve language barriers, and the message is clear. Erasing poverty, war, and exploitation serve every country's interest. Here's where the world stood up to U.S. imperialism with regard to Iraq. The U.S. may be the elephant in the room when it comes to economic clout with the U.N., but they get one chair at the table. Keep in mind that the U.S. has a special privilege that only five countries share, the power to veto any decision they dislike.
A lot of good deeds happen here.
Things like the Manifesto on Poverty came out of this room. An international effort to raise poor nations through smart development.
Maybe we ought to send Condi Rice in here.
Kids with guns. Who else is going to address these issues?
If nothing else, I have longevity now. That means something like 66 years of observing. And the building worked beautifully. The people worked beautifully. The whole design was absolutely spectacular. It allowed a world order. And I couldn't believe that people didn't want that. But then I did read that the same thing happened to the League of Nations. The big industrial arms dealers in those days didn't want anybody looking over their shoulder. So now I think that we've been losing what my husband fought World War II to create, which was a United Nations. And I do not understand why it has faded. But we're going to get to the bottom of it and fix it if we can. I think it's wonderful you're doing the program.
Here in New York, you know that about 19% of people live in poverty, right. In poverty in New York. So this is not a question for some people in Africa, in South America, in Asia. It's a problem, a challenge to the world. And the leadership that the UN is providing is very, very important.
The United Nations may not be perfect, but in this, the age of the corporation, what other organization stands in the way of cluster bombs, poverty, exploitation, and fear? The next time you hear some bad-tempered bully sneer at the UN, ask yourself, what kind of person opposes feeding the hungry, healing the sick, and putting an end to war. It's time for the silent majority of Americans, people like you and me, to defend the UN, one of the last bastions of what is noble, right, and good in the world. I'm Daniel Noel. I'll see you later.
My name's Jeremy Gilley. I was an actor for many years, taking whatever roles I could. The last job I did was a crazy sci-fi. My character was trying to save the planet. I thought it would be my big break. I heard it was seen in Eastern Europe. Then I started making my own low-budget films, looking for clues to make sense of the world. The more I looked, the more confused I felt.
I want to leave!
When I'd watch TV, it seemed like the world's in such a desperate state. The more violence I saw, the more frustrated I felt about not being able to make a difference. But I really wanted to try. In July 1998, I had the idea. What if there was one day, just 24 hours, when the world stopped killing? I was going to try to create a day of peace and make a documentary about that journey. If I failed, it would make an interesting film about a world unwilling to change. If I succeeded, well, that was almost inconceivable. Over the next 2 years, I travelled the world to build and document a case for the day's existence.
The day could be the beginning of a deeper process. It has the practical impact of allowing access of humanitarian aid, access of information, freedom of movement, relief from the pressure and tension of not knowing where the next bomb or bullet may come from. That, to me, is an idea whose time has come.
If there is a cessation for a day, then it gives us an opportunity to move supplies safely through places that are otherwise difficult.
In various parts of the world, ceasefires have allowed UNICEF in particular to reach children with interventions, for example, a polio immunization campaign or a measles immunization campaign, or perhaps vitamin A.
I think it's a great idea. Any moment, whether it's a day or a week, that we can give the combatants to pause, to think, and reflect on what they are doing to their own people and to the environment will be a great achievement, and I will support it 100%.
The United Kingdom and Costa Rican governments have now joined together.
I think the important thing is to keep talking about it and keep trying, you know.
Whether it's possible or not, you don't know, but it's not a time to be cynical.
Was originally brought to our attention by a UK-based organisation, Peace One Day.
We don't need war to prove that we can have peace.
Be observed as a global ceasefire day.
I just think there's a really vital, sweeping peace movement out there that's not getting covered in the press.
To make peace a reality throughout the world, 365 days a year. Thank you, Mr. President.
May I take it that the Assembly decides to adopt that resolution? It is so decided.
You know those things that you're having caught that you whack? They whack one of them. What's wrong with the world, mama?
People living like they... A peace day has been adopted by every member state of the United Nations. An annual day, separate from politics and religion. A day when every human being on Earth can express the same desire to live together peacefully as one. And that's what's important, every human being. Because if you can find it in yourself to do something for world peace on September 21st, no matter how big or small, then together we can achieve a moment of global unity. It's not all about grand gestures. It can be as simple as saying sorry. So the challenge now is to let the people know that Peace Day exists, that global unity is not just a dream, Peace One Day has used its limited resources to ask people to act on the day. We're confident that we've reached 10% of the world's population, generating activities from individuals in over 100 countries. But we want to speak to everyone, and that's where we need your help. By making your own commitment to Peace Day and logging it on our website, you will inspire others to do the same. As commitments grow, so the message will spread until everyone becomes aware of the day.
It is our moral responsibility. It's make an attempt. This is not a question whether it's within our lifetime or not. We are a human being. We have the responsibility to show right path. So I fully support.
This is beautiful because I think this whole event is going to go on next year and build and build and build, yeah? Give everybody a hand for putting this thing together because it's courageous.
We will not stop until September 21st is recognized and celebrated throughout the world. It's up to our generation to build the foundation for global unity. If you build a house, you start with one brick. If we want to build peace, why not start with one day? And that day has arrived.
Liberty News TV depends on the support of viewers like you, not corporations. Visit our website at libertynewstv.com and let us know you care.